Welcome back to the Extension Experience Podcast. I'm Dana Zook.
And Josh Michon.
We have got Trent back here to talk livestock markets with us. Trent, he is a risk management advisor with Comark Equity and Alliance. So let's just jump right in. Let's talk about livestock markets. Trent, the cattle market has been looking pretty good compared to years past. So let's just start there. What kind of comments do you have to kind of get us rolling?
Yeah, well, I like to think I went to a grain marketing company so I wouldn't have to talk livestock, but that didn't happen.
It all kind of rules together, doesn't it?
It all goes together, yep. So now my focus has changed, but it's kind of a unique skill to be able to understand cattle markets in a general term, because you hear a whole lot of market commentary nationally about grains and where people think they're going, but there's always that important demand coming from beef that also affects grain markets. And when we look at cattle, it all stems from the fact that cattle inventory numbers have been low, and you could argue they've been low since 2013. I mean, that was the last time that we had really low numbers and we tried to recover there. And, you know, that was in the middle of drought years that we caused all that liquidation, and then we saw them recover, and then various reasons why now we're also reducing that cow herd again. Drought causes that. Decreased demand, inflation affects cattle or beef demand as well. So here recently, yes, going into the fall, we saw really good cattle prices and then some correction. And now we're sitting here wondering where we're going to next. What can be a reasonable price level to expect moving forward? And it seems like anytime that feeder cattle number gets anywhere close to smelling $3, we see some kind of a decent correction. And I don't know, Dana, why do you think that might be?
I don't know, because it's not really realistic. Is that what we're looking at? I mean, is it a realistic number? I don't know. So cattle, like you said in the episode previous, cattle markets kind of hit like a low in January. Mm-hmm. And is that, I mean, why did that happen? I mean, was it like speculation? I mean, I have a trouble with cattle markets because I feel like there's a lot of speculation out there with the grains and all the things, but I guess I didn't answer your question. I don't know.
I didn't expect you to.
Okay. You know I don't know anything about this.
But you're the livestock specialist.
I know, but I am definitely not an economically minded livestock specialist.
You know, again, sometimes when you look at the feeder cattle market, there's been criticism that it's a fairly illiquid market where there's not a whole lot of traders present. So then you get some volatility showing up in that market. And that can be either a problem or a benefit, depending on what side of that price movement you're on. But I would just call around the first of the year somewhat of a correction in the market trying to discover its identity. Again, if you have a thinly traded market, you can see lows maybe go lower than they should and highs go higher than they should. And you talk about speculation, you know, we need all the liquidity we can get in terms of discovering that price action and trying to determine where that could be. Yeah, you know, the local livestock auction is a great price discovery tool. You know, we see that all the time, where if the futures market does something that we didn't quite expect, you might see basis adjust for that. And the cash value of cattle can typically stay, you know, at a pretty solid level considering wild futures price movement. So we did see some back off, but after the first of the year, we saw a buyer show up and saw some pretty good values for those feeder cattle, and they've continued to go up. And we had some cattle inventory numbers come out. You know, we saw the lowest cattle inventory numbers since 1951, lowest beef cow inventory since 1961 here in that last report. So it's just where can prices go? And at some point you get a bunch of economists in a room, they all talk to each other, they'll agree with each other that maybe the sky's the limit. We don't know where it can go. Mm-hmm. And we all know that's not true, because there's a little thing there called demand that the U.S. U.S. consumer has to decide how much they're willing to pay for beef, and by extension, the rest of the world as well, when we think about exports. But yeah, you know, my big concern here would be the health of the U.S. economy. Inflation's hitting everyone hard. Last time this happened, we saw an incredible response from the U.S. consumer to pay higher prices for beef, and they weren't willing to make those substitutions very easily. I think that will probably still continue to hold true, but the sky is not the limit, obviously. There's going to be a level where consumers cannot continue to pay higher prices. So I don't know if we'll see anywhere between $2.75, $3
right.
In the coming year. You know, something I do agree with that we hear people saying is we'll probably see less wild highs, you know, a lower percentage increase in beef and cattle coming into this year. So probably more muted price action as we try to find the top in this cycle. And I would imagine at some point within 2024, we will kind of discover the highs. And if we continue to see good pasture conditions and good hay inventories, at some point replacements will start coming into the beef herd and we'll start turning the corner. Now, again, what's the timeline on bringing in a heifer and her having a calf and that calf making it to market, that calf making it to the feedlot, and then going all the way to slaughter? That's a long process. But, you know, we see this thing. We have a unique opportunity to look back to 2013 and thereafter, whenever we saw prices go extremely high there into 2014, 2015, how quickly cattle markets can fall off from those highs and readjust to a new normal. So I would be very cautious as we go into this year if we see new highs, what that could mean from the other direction.
So now that you mentioned it, what kind of advice can you give to producers who are thinking about, hey, I want to buy some of these replacements. I want to be part of this herd, overall national herd growth.
Yeah.
Because those replacement heifers and the pairs are going for a very high, very pretty penny. Mm-hmm. Let's say that. So what is your advice to producers who are thinking about that?
Well, the fun answer is just to be countercyclical.
Right.
You know, don't be constrained by the same constraints as your neighbors. So have all of the grass when they don't, grow your herd whenever they're small, and then do everything opposite. And then you can participate in these markets in the cheapest way.
Right.
Not the reality, obviously.
No.
So we have producers with small cow herds that they've probably sold off some of their least productive females. I would imagine we have a fairly young cow herd that's pretty high producers, high quality cattle. And we have an abundance of grass possibly now because we've cut our stocking rates down and we've had good moisture. What I would want producers to think about is, one, did they participate in the increasing cattle cycle the last time around? Think back to 2015. If you bought heifers at that point and entered them into your herd, are they making money yet? You know, there were a lot of payoff schedules there that we saw that cow might not make money for 8 years. Mm. If you're, and then we saw heifers and heifer pairs and things going for over $3,000. So
still haven't got paid off yet.
Yeah. Well,
if they're still here.
Yeah. If they're still in the herd and they're still producing, they might be making money now. So that's something you don't necessarily want to do to yourself, is set yourself up for something where the average payoff is beyond the average life of a cow in your herd. You know, how long do your cows stick around? If you keep your cows for 10 or 12 years, chances are at some point they're going to make money, and you don't necessarily have to worry about that if you can cash flow that thing for that long. But what we have, the problem we have now that we didn't have then, was incredibly high interest costs. I mean, interest costs have at least doubled, and in a lot of cases even more than that. And how does that interest cost play into the payoff horizon on that cow? And that might add a year or two to her payoff. So be incredibly critical of buying those animals. Now, not participating in active herd growth will decrease demand for heifers. And you would think that maybe this time around, if there's a lot of people that are guarded to increasing their cow herd, you might see a more muted replacement female cost in a longer term rebuild versus the everybody wants everything right now and prices go extremely high and we build up that herd incredibly quickly and then we have a sharp drop off. In my opinion, that would be a positive, because anytime you can slow things down and reduce cost and drag things out a little bit longer, you don't get exposed to those price shocks that you might otherwise be exposed to if everyone's trying to do the same thing at once. But there's various tools. Again, there's the futures market, which is never a guarantee, obviously, but there's ways to hedge price risk there. There's livestock risk protection. There's some other products. There's a wean calf product that's coming out too. That's kind of a new thing that we're guarded, kind of trying to learn something about right now. But there's various tools out there to lay off risk, at least price risk. And that's something that I would greatly encourage people to do is run some kind of a long-term payoff on those cows, make a budget, and be honest with yourself about how long it'll take to pay for them. Because a lot of times access to capital here this time around is going to be difficult, in my opinion, just because of the increased cost of interest. And we've had a few years, especially if you're a wheat farmer or a row crop farmer, that you've also had some losses there as well. So financial health of the whole operation is going to be incredibly important when we make these decisions.
Yeah, I would say we're probably in kind of a tender time from like overall perspective. If we, listeners, we talked about grain markets just before this and how the high cost to put a crop in. I would say there's a very high cost to producing cows, calves, maintaining those cows, producing those calves. And I've had some pushback, to be honest, from producers saying, well, we're just farmers. We don't do this scientifically or anything, which I think most farmers do. But pushback as far as that goes, I mean, do you feel like tools and you know, technology at our fingertips and research is still very valuable to the, you know, both crop and livestock industry in kind of helping you determine or making more in for less with less? What do you think about that?
Farming is not a hobby. I mean, it doesn't take very many acres to be a multi-million dollar operation. So if you're thinking about yourself as the quote unquote simple farmer who doesn't plan like that, who doesn't think like that, I would challenge you to reconsider that thought process. And if you aren't comfortable making those decisions or having those thought processes, there's plenty of people out there willing to help. Right? In the title of my job description, a risk management advisor, that's what we do. We help producers think through contracting when it comes to grain, contracting when it comes to cattle, and how that fits in. And then numerous resources within Extension, the same thing with economists and the Ag Econ department and various individuals, and all the county educators can also help with some of that. Don't make these hundreds of thousand dollar decisions without a little bit of forethought. And again, there's a lot of things out there that you don't necessarily consider. You know, how are you going to deal with losses? You know, there's tax implications when it comes to that. When you put an animal, whether it's on a five-year note or less, or if you can finance them out longer than that, the reality of getting that far down the road and understanding the cash flow needs and giving that animal what it needs to be profitable for you is an in-depth decision. So whenever we're have our standard replacement strategy and it's a very small portion of our herd that we're replacing every year, it's easy to kind of gloss over the increased cost of growing a heifer. But if you're trying to replace whole herds, if you're buying 30 or 40 or 50 replacement females at one time and you're trying to manage this new group and the extra costs and the higher cull rates of a first year set of heifers and then trying to grow those animals as they're trying to grow calves themselves, it's just everything's more expensive. It never stops.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's more than just feed.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of other things. Feed. And if you don't do those things and you don't manage them differently, then the profitability on that set is not going to be what it is on your mature cows. So a lot of people will just go through that, and the mature cows, if they make a really good profit on the mature cows during these high calf prices, that will overlook some of the negative aspects of that replacement herd that you're trying to bring on. But don't we want to participate in the good market? Like, we do want to make money during this time, because right. In 5 years, if we do everything we hope and maybe El Nino sticks around longer than they say it will, and we have good grass pasture for the next few years, there's the other side of extremely high cattle prices, which is extremely low cattle prices.
Right.
And we're trying to ramp up our herds. And if you have the biggest herd you've ever had at the lowest prices you've received in the last several years, how does that affect your operation? And how do you weather that storm where now I have all these pounds of beef to sell at a lower price? So
yeah, there's a lot that goes into it.
You can make it as complicated as we want.
That was kind of a complicated question, but it's just a lot that goes into production agriculture, whether you're putting a seed in the ground or you know, having a calf, letting the cow calve out on the pasture. There, it all can be very complicated.
And I get accused of being the eternal pessimist, and I definitely don't necessarily think that's the way to go through your life. You have to take risk, obviously, to be in agriculture. So then I challenge people, what is it that you think you sell? Do you sell beef? Do you sell grass? Do you sell grain? While you do sell commodities, you also sell management. And there's a lot of opportunity to be the best manager in agriculture out there, in my opinion, because there are several people, as you said, that will say, I'm just a simple guy. I don't do all this. The fact that you're thinking about it, that you're listening to a podcast about this, you know, getting help, contacting professionals that can help you with these other aspects of managing your risk is going to be the first step to increasing your management and hopefully getting a return on that management and that extra effort.
Well, that was a great episode, Trent. Thank you so much for adding to that. Thank you for coming, taking the time out of your day. Do you have any like simple thoughts for simple ag producers out there just as they're going into the next year with their livestock herd?
Yeah. One thing changing jobs that I've learned is relationships are so important. Having mentors is so important. You know, whether you're a young producer or a seasoned producer, finding meaningful friendships and people you can trust in this industry is invaluable because there's so many aspects of this industry that I didn't even know about. I thought I participated, you know, I grew grain, I grew cattle, mm-hmm. I worked in extension, but the further afield you get and the more people you meet and the more people you learn to trust and build those relationships with, you can get some invaluable insights and benefit from some of the things that they've learned the hard way so you don't have to.
Very good thoughts, Trent. Listeners, thank you so much for joining us. If we'll have some, maybe a few notes in the show notes if you need some more resources. If not, thanks, Josh. Thanks, Trent, for joining the podcast. Back together to have the podcast team together. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, you don't have to wait as long next time.
Yeah, well, maybe we ought to have like a quarterly Trent episode. Maybe we'll do that coming forward. Thank you, listeners, for joining us and have a wonderful week.